This is Luke, my pastor at Walnut Creek Church downtown. We're so glad that you found this resource, and we hope that it strengthens and encourages your walk with the Lord Jesus Christ. But we do want to remind you, this is not to take place of gathering with God's people on Sunday morning. It is just a resource. And so if you don't have a home church, we'd love to invite you to Walnut Creek Church downtown. You can find more information about the church in the description, as well as our other locations in the Des Moines area. And if you're not in the Des Moines area, we'd encourage you to find a gospel preaching church. Again, we hope that you are strengthened and encouraged in your walk with the Lord Jesus Christ as you listen to this message.
The word love is a great word. But since we only have one word for love in English, it gets used in many different ways. I was thinking about how I used the word love this past week, and I said this week that I love my wife, I love my kids, I love carrots, and I love grapefruit, and the list goes on and on and on and on. And we understand the relative difference between saying I love my wife and I love carrots, but we use the same word. We use the same word, but in Greek there are four words for love. Now, the first word is eros, which means romantic love or passionate love. It's where we get the word erotic. And then you have philia. This is love between friends. This is the love of friendship. And then you have storge. This is family love. This typically speaks of the love that parents have for their children. And then you have the highest form of love, which is agape love. This is unconditional love. This is self-sacrificing love. This is the love of the will. This is a commitment to another person, to pursue the highest good of another. And all throughout the book of Romans, Paul has shown us the agape love of God. We could look at many references throughout the first 11 chapters, but one of them is in Romans chapter 5, verse 8, where Paul says, "But God demonstrates his agape love for us, and that while we were still sinners, Christ died for us." And for the first time in Romans, the book of Romans, in Romans 12, verse 9, Paul says that the agape love that you have received from God, you are now to give to others. That the Christian life is a life where we receive the love of God, and then we give that love to other people. That love is to govern the Christian life. John chapter 13, verse 35, Jesus says, "By this, all men will know that you are my disciples." Why? How will the world know that we are Christians? Is it by our knowledge, by our wisdom, by our power, by our wealth? No, none of those things. The mark that we belong to Christ is our love for one another. And that little phrase, for one another, is an important phrase because this is not a general call to be more loving. This is not a generic love. But what we're going to see in Romans chapter 12 and what Jesus is talking about in John chapter 13 is love for one another, for other Christians. The whole world says that you should love people. Love is a good thing, but the whole world does not say that you should love the church. See, the mark, one of the defining marks of a Christian is that you love the people of God. You love other believers. But what does this life of love look like? What is love inside of a local church supposed to look like? Well, in Romans 12, 9 through 16, we find 21 commands, 21 imperatives. And that is fascinating to me because in Romans chapter 1 through 11, there are two commands, two imperatives, and then you get to this section and there are 21. 21 in just a few verses. And so there's no way we're going to be able to get through all of these instructions this morning, but the theme that runs through all of these instructions is love. It is the life of love. And so we're going to look at four characteristics of love from the passage, and the context, again, is our love for one another. It's not just a call to love all people. Next week, we're going to talk about how do we love our enemies and how do we love the world, but Paul's focus in this text is how do we love each other. And so the whole sermon is designed to be practical application for our lives. So here we go. Characteristic number one, love must be sincere. Love must be sincere. Verse 9. In the NIV, it says, love must be sincere. In the CSB, it says, let love be without hypocrisy. The word hypocrite 2,000 years ago in the Roman world meant a stage actor. That's what it meant, a stage actor. It's someone who wears different masks in a performance, in a play, because they're playing different characters, so they have different masks, and they would put different masks on depending on the character they are playing. This is a theater word. And so when Paul says that love must be without hypocrisy, he means the church is not a stage. It's not theater. It's not a game. It's not a performance. that we are to love one another from the heart. We aren't putting on a show. And this is challenging because most of us learn how to present ourselves. Throughout the course of our lives, we learn how to present ourselves well, and that's a good thing. We should know how to present ourselves, but what can happen over the course of time, especially if you live life in the church, is that if you spend 2 years in a church, 5 years in a church, you become fluent in Christianese. That's what happens. You learn the culture, you learn the lingo, and you learn how to put a Christian veneer on your life, a Christian mask. So where you are a Christian on the outside, but on the inside, something else is happening. This is a very common experience. I know I have grown up in the church, and I know how to play the church game pretty well. I know the lingo. I know the language. I know the culture. And if you're not careful, what can happen is that you learn how to live your life wearing a mask, the Christian mask. And see, this is very common in the church for our relationships to be theater, to be a play, to wear a mask. And the ultimate sign of this is Judas. I was thinking about Judas this week, and remember when he's talking to the Jewish leaders? And he says to the Jewish leaders, he says, the one that I kiss, he's the one. He's the one. Go after him. And so Judas walks up to Jesus. Jesus is in the Garden of Gethsemane, hours before the cross. And Judas walks up to him with a smile on his face, and he calls him rabbi. He calls him master. Teacher. He gives him a hug and he kisses him. And Jesus says, Judas, is it with a kiss that you betray the Son of Man? And so you see on the outside, it's right for our lips to call Jesus master. It's right to call him teacher. That's good and that is true. If I was with Jesus, I would want to hug him too. I would love to give him a kiss on the cheek. And so those actions are right, but we know that what was happening in Judas's heart was not love. It was murder. It was envy. It was greed. It was the Christian veneer. But on the inside, his heart was filled with dead men's bones. And so Paul says, our love for one another, it can't just be a mask. It can't be a performance. It needs to come from our heart, that we are to love one another from the heart, which leads to characteristic number two, that love requires hate. Love requires hate. Now, this is a wild thought, especially for our culture, that love requires hate. The flow of verse 9 is incredible. I mean, look at the flow of verse 9. Love must be sincere. Okay, what's the next word? You're right in verse 9. Love must be sincere, period. What's the next word? What is it? Hate. What? Love must be sincere. Okay, Paul, what do? He says, hate. Hate. Hate people? No. Hate what is evil. Cling to what is good. To love well, you must hate evil and cling to what is good. And Paul uses strong verbs here. The verb to hate means to detest with a passion. It's stronger than hate. It is to detest with a passion, to loathe. I was with someone this week, and I just asked him the question. I said, what's something you loathe? And he thought about it for a second, and he says, the Kansas City Chiefs. And I said, you and most of America right now. But I said, you know how you feel when it's third down and 15 and Patrick Mahomes scrambles like an old lady and picks up 16 yards? That's how you should feel about sin. That's how you should feel towards evil. You should loathe it. This means you're not indifferent. You are not indifferent to evil. You don't cuddle with evil. You don't just hate the consequences of evil. Proverbs 8, verse 13 says, the fear of the Lord is to hate evil. He's bringing the fear of God into our love. Paul is tying our love to a standard. He's tying it to what is holy and righteous and good. So he says, you need to hate what is evil and then cling to what is good. It's another very strong verb. It means to be glued to. Tie yourself to what is good. Be glued to what is good. Now, why does this matter? Why does it matter that you love what is good and hate what is evil? Well, there are many reasons. I'll give you just a couple. First, we need purity in our hearts. To love well, you need purity in your heart. Where does love come from? Where does it come from? 1 Timothy chapter 1, verse 5 says, the goal of this command is love. He says, the goal of what I'm writing you is love that you would love well, which comes from a pure heart and a good conscience and a sincere faith. Where does love come from? A pure heart, a good conscience, and a sincere faith. I want you to think about this question for a moment. When you're proud, when you're proud and selfish, does that help you to love people well? Certainly not. Does your bitterness help you to love others well? When you're really angry, when you're under the influence of anger, does that help you to love people well? You know, no one has ever said, you know, the way that guy yelled at me and threatened me, I just felt so loved by that. No one ever says that. What about greed? When you're given over to greed or lust, what happens when your heart is filled with lust? Are you going to love people really well? Certainly not. See, when we give in to evil, the immediate result is that it injures our ability to love well. When your heart is filled up with your sin, and not all the sins, Paul doesn't say hate some sin. He says hate evil. And we don't love all sin. We just love certain sins. We love certain evils in our lives. But when we hang on to those evils, when we hang on to our lust or our pride or our selfishness, we don't love well. When we do not hate evil, we do not love well. It injures our ability to love, and this is what produces a hypocritical love, a two-faced love. Why is there such a thing as fake love? It's because we don't hate evil in our heart, but we need to project or present or perform Christianity. And so there's this discontinuity in our soul. And when we hold on to evil, it injures our conscience. It hurts our conscience, and it damages our faith. And so if we're going to love well in our souls, we got to hate evil. And so the first application of hating evil is not when we see evil in other people, we go up to them and say, I hate that in you. That's not it. You can try it. Won't go well. But that's not what Paul's talking about. The first application is hate evil in you and love what is good. Love what is good. Another reason it's important that we hate evil and cling to what is good is that we need goals in our relationships. We need goals in our relationships. See, our culture pretends that love is blind, that there are no standards, that love is a judgment-free zone. I don't know if you've heard that term before, but Planet Fitness, they're all over the place. I work out at Planet Fitness, but if you go to Planet Fitness, you see all over the place, judgment-free zone. This is a judgment-free zone. Judgment-free zone. And if you read about it, they have that tagline because they want to promote love and inclusion. But if you pay attention to the gym, you'll see that they have what's called a LUNK alarm. Have you heard of this? A LUNK alarm. This is from their website. It says Planet Fitness LUNK alarm is a loud siren that draws attention and pauses workouts. The alarm also alerts gym managers to the LUNK. So what's a LUNK? When a person grunts or drops weights, it draws unwanted attention, and the LUNK alarm will sound, and the club manager will intervene. The manager will take the LUNK behind the gym and give him 40 lashes minus one. I just added that last sentence, but that's what it feels like. It's a judgment-free zone except for the LUNKs. So no grunting there. Don't drop the weights. Just to be honest, sometimes I do grunt randomly at Planet Fitness. I just see what happens, but nothing happens. But but you think, what is that? A judgment-free zone unless you grunt. That's the standard. No grunting. You cannot drop weights. Or they sound an alarm and they label you a LUNK. There's a standard. The point is, even if you're trying to create a judgment-free zone where there are no goals and there are no standards, there's always a standard. There's always a goal. There's always something. So the question is not, will there be a standard somewhere? Here's the question. What will the standard of your relationships be? It will either honor God or it will dishonor God. And see, to love what is good and to hate what is evil is lining up our goals and our relationships in accordance with the character of God. And that's what love looks like. My favorite definition of love is that love pursues the highest good of another, even at great personal cost. So what we're saying in our relationships is I love you, which means I am pursuing your highest good, even at great personal cost. And see, when we love people that way, we tend to draw out the best in others. We tend to spur one another on towards love and good deeds. We want to stimulate one another. Now, certainly, how does this apply? It requires much wisdom. It requires understanding. We are to be so patient with one another, but sometimes love looks like saying to a brother or sister, hey, you seem too comfortable with your sin. See, in our culture, that's judgment, hatred, and it could come from a hateful heart. But see, love has standards where we say, no, we're in this together. We want to honor Christ. We want to obey Christ. We want to trust Christ. We want Christ to be honored and exalted in our lives. And so, brother or sister, trust the Lord. Obey the Lord. Again, that requires patience and wisdom and understanding. But see, there will be some standard that you have. We need standards. We need goals in our relationships. And those goals are to hate what is evil and love what is good. It is to honor God. Characteristic number 3 is that love must be loyal. Love must be loyal. Romans 12:10 says, be devoted to one another in love. Now, in this little phrase, Paul uses 2 family words. There are 2 family words to describe our relationships with one another. And this is important because the idea of the church being our family, it runs through the entire New Testament. Do you remember Matthew chapter 12 when Jesus is with his disciples and his mom and his siblings show up and they're like, hey, they want to come see you. Your mother is here. Your siblings are here. And Jesus says, who is my mother? Who are my brothers? My mother and my brothers are those who do the will of God. And so Jesus is saying that among the people of God that there is to be a loyalty that ties us together, that because of what Christ has done, we are really brothers and sisters. We are family. And that those family ties run deep. They run deep down to the very bottom. They're the most basic relationships that we are to have. And he says, be devoted to one another in brotherly love. And the first family word is behind be devoted. It's philostorgos, from the word storge. Do you remember that third love that we mentioned? It speaks of the natural affection and loyalty that parents have for their kids. You don't have to be a Christian to love your kids. You don't have to be a Christian to be loyal to your kids. Have you ever seen those Mama Bear t-shirts? Have you seen those before? I think those shirts are great. They're very thoughtful t-shirts. Those t-shirts give women a chance to warn everyone that if you mess with my kid, I'll rip your head off like a wild animal or whatever it is. You're just warning everyone. And you see the natural instinct inside of moms and dads to be loyal to their children, to take care of their kids. And Paul says this. He uses that same concept and he says to all of you and to me, to us, be devoted to one another. That we are to be devoted to one another in love. We are to be devoted to one another in love. What a standard. You know, David says in Psalm 16:3, he says, as for the saints who are on the earth, the saints, the holy ones, the people of God, as for the people of God, how did David think about them? They are the majestic ones in whom is all my delight. They are the majestic ones in whom is all my delight. I love them. And you could respond to David by saying, David, don't you know that these people are all messed up? David would say, I know. But I love them. I delight in them. They are the majestic ones. And this is the way that we are to be towards one another. That you are the majestic ones. In you is my delight. We delight in one another. And this is such a powerful example to the world about what loving relationships look like. And so as parents, you know that your kids have problems, but you're loyal to them. You love them. You're devoted to them. And so he uses that word, be devoted. Philostorgos. And then he uses another word, Philadelphia, brotherly love. Be devoted to one another in brotherly love. be devoted to one another in brotherly love. That there ought to be a loyalty to one another. That we are not just a random gathering of people, but we are a family. The church is called the household of God. And so that means when we come to church and we come to worship the Lord, and when we go to Bible study, and when we're serving, and when we see each other in public, we ought to have a family love, a family loyalty to one another. It means that when life goes south, when life moves in a direction you don't want it to go, when life gets difficult, we aren't to pull back, but we should lean in with each other. We should help one another. And this is something that I think, by God's grace, I think we do a pretty good job of. But Paul says, he says, just as I have instructed you to love one another, do so all the more. 1 Thessalonians chapter 4. Just as I have instructed you to love one another, I instruct you, do so all the more. All the more. And that we are to love one another and be devoted to one another. We are to be loyal to one another. The fourth characteristic is that love eagerly honors others. Love eagerly honors others. The CSB says in verse 10, love one another deeply as brothers and sisters. Take the lead in honoring one another. Love one another deeply as brothers and sisters. Take the lead in honoring one another. The ESV says, love one another with brotherly affection. Outdo one another in showing honor. The NLT says, love each other with genuine affection and take delight in honoring each other. Take delight in showing honor or honoring other people. I'm convinced that most relational problems, especially within the church, this applies in life, but I think especially within the church, I am convinced that most relational problems are rooted in one or both parties not feeling valued. Why does it break down? Why does it turn ugly? It's because one or both parties feel dishonored. You don't feel valued. You don't feel appreciated. You feel disrespected. And so Paul says, listen, in the church, honor each other, value each other, appreciate each other. The ESV says, outdo one another in showing honor. He says, I know you're going to compete. So if you're going to compete, compete in showing honor. Why don't we honor each other? Because naturally, we're competitive. And if I honor you, I'm putting you above me. And I don't like that. I want to be above you. I want to be above you. And see, competition, it ruins love. Competition is what causes relationships to fracture. Competition, there's a place for competition in sports. There's something good and right about that. But I'm not talking about competition on a football field or a basketball court. I'm talking about competition in our relationships. That there really is no place for competition among one another. That's not one of the commands. Compete with one another. It's not what it is. And we don't compete in every area of life, but you're going to compete in some areas. Naturally, your heart will compete in some areas. Who has the best kids? Don't you think about that? How do my kids compare to others? Who has a better job? Who has a better marriage? Who knows cooler people? Who has a better house? Who has more honor in the church? The list just goes on and on and on and on and on. And so we compare and so we compete. And it makes it so difficult for us to honor one another. And so I want to give you just a few ways that we can honor each other. How do we take the lead in honoring one another? Okay, number one, listen well. So many people just want to talk. Very few people want to listen. Listen well. I have found that people can be surrounded by people day after day, but feel totally alone because they don't connect with anyone. They don't actually connect with another human being. One counselor said this: being heard is so close to being loved that for the average person, they are almost indistinguishable. Being heard is so close to being loved that it's almost indistinguishable. The average person can't even tell the difference, being heard and being loved. And see, you honor that. When you listen to people, this is what you're saying to them. Number one, you're worth listening to. You're honoring them by saying, you're worth listening to. And you're honoring them by saying, I might actually gain something from listening to what you have to say. And so there's a humility that is required there. And as a parent, if you have kids, I would encourage you to practice this with your kids, with your spouse, and with other people. Just listen. Just say, you know what? I don't need to say anything. I'm just going to listen and ask questions. And I'm telling you, people will feel so loved by you. People will feel so loved if you just shut up and be interested in them. And so it's just one way to honor people. Now, if both people are trying that trick on each other, it's just dead silence for a while. It's going to be a little weird. So there's a time to speak, obviously, and share what's going on. But just having a posture, I want to listen. I want to listen to people. Another little tip on how to honor people is compliment people. Compliment people. I did not say flatter people. Flattery is a trap. It's a sin. We ought not flatter. But see, one of the marks of a competitive spirit is that competitive people cannot compliment their peers. See, you can compliment, someone who's way above you, you know, just pick whoever that person is in your mind. Michael Jordan is a great basketball player. He's awesome. He's the best ever. That's no threat to me to say Michael Jordan is a great basketball player. But see, one of the marks of a competitive spirit is that the people you view as being on your same level, one of the marks is you can't say good things about them. They're your competitors. And see, compliment, having the mentality that I want to compliment people, you're training your eyes to look for what is good in other people and then tell them. Tell them. I appreciate that about you. You know, we're going to die someday. We're going to die. And when we get to the end of our lives, we don't want to have all these thoughts and feelings towards people that we've never communicated. And so part of honoring people is looking and finding what is honorable in them and telling them. And you ought not think, well, if I compliment them, they're going to get a big head. So I'm going to keep them humble by never saying anything nice to them. Bad strategy. Does anyone here feel like they are just too encouraged in life? I just have so much encouragement in my life. I can't even stand it anymore. Nobody thinks that. So compliment people. It's one way to honor them. Another way is to compliment people behind their back. Compliment people behind their back. You know, one of the greatest ways, the clearest ways to dishonor people is that when they're around, brother, it's great to see you. They step out of the room, that guy's an idiot. And all of us are guilty of this at times. All of us have done that. But to fight against that is to say, I'm going to compliment people behind their back. When they're not here, I'm going to speak well of them. And not in a weird way. It takes wisdom. It takes understanding. It takes a little practice to figure that out. But see, we want to have the types of relationships with each other where we're not wondering what people are saying when we're not in the room. We don't want those types of relationships. We want the types of relationships where we can look at one another and we just say, hey, brother, I see this in your life. That's a problem. Let's talk about it. So I know if you have a problem with me and I have a problem with you, we just talk to each other. And when I'm not around, you're not bashing me. And when you're not around, I'm not bashing you. Rather, I'm trying to uphold your honor when you're not in the room. That's what friendship looks like. And see, the best relationships that you have are people that you trust when you're not in the room. Those are the best friendships that you'll have. Next, invite people. I'm going to skip a couple for the sake of time. Sorry. Invite people into your home. Invite people into your home. Romans 12:13 says, share with the saints in their needs. Pursue hospitality. Pursue hospitality. The word for hospitality is philonexia. Philonexia. It means to love strangers. It means you love strangers. Now, just to be clear, I'm not saying that you should be indiscriminate in who you invite into your home. Don't invite a mass murderer into your home, threatening your home. That's not what I'm saying. But there's a mentality that we are to have as Christians where we say, I'm going to use my home to love people. To love people, and not just your friends. Not just the people that you naturally love. Romans 12:16 says, live in harmony with one another. Do not be proud. Now, think about this. Do not be proud. Instead, associate with the humble. You know what that means, to associate with them? Be friends with them. Identify with them. Invite them into your home. You know, the first century church was made up, as the gospel spread, it was made up of Jews and Gentiles, men and women, rich and poor, slave and free. Why were they all in the same room? In society, you don't see that breakdown. You go within the Roman Empire, you did not see that breakdown. Slaves and free together, Jews and Gentiles together, rich and poor. You didn't see it. Why did you see it in the church? It's because they were all redeemed the same way. That all of us are saved exactly the same way by the blood of Christ, by what Christ has done for us. And that provides a level ground for all of us to stand. And so one way to show the reality of the gospel is to invite people into your home. Invite them into your home, even people that you would not necessarily connect with. So what do you connect on? Christ. Christ. So use your home. Invite people into your home. There's much more to say, but we don't want to be a segmented church. Cool people, they're over there. Not cool people, over here. You know, rich people, poor people. We're not segmented that way. We're one body in Christ. And so we are to humble ourselves and love people and connect with people we would not naturally connect with. Now, how do we do this? I don't know how you're feeling right now. I've been studying this all week. And I just see all the ways that I don't even come close to the standard. And so how do we even try to live this way? Well, just to close, I want to give you a couple thoughts on how to do this. Number one, marvel at God's love for us. Where do you start? You don't take Romans 9 or 11, 9 through 16 and say, this is my checklist for the day, this is what I'm doing. Rather, what you do is you marvel at God's love. In one sense, it would be right to say, in view of the mercies of God, let love be sincere. In view of God's mercy, let love be sincere. Or John puts it this way, 1 John 4:19, we love why? Why do you love? Why do you love? Because he first loved us. Because he first loved us. The fuel, the motivation, the power that we need to love and serve others does not come from ourselves. It comes from God. It comes from tasting the sweetness of being loved by God. It comes from a crucified Christ who lived for us, and he went to the cross and died in our place and rose again from the dead. It comes from sensing the reality that we have a glorious hope, that one day we will be with the Lord in the new heavens and the new earth forever and ever and ever and ever. And to the degree that we value and appreciate our forgiveness, to that degree we will love. And so the mark, or the motivation I should say, for our love, the motivation, it always has to come back to what Christ has done for us. And so marvel, just marvel, look at what Christ has done for you. Marvel at his goodness to you, his grace to you. That's the fuel, the power that we need to even try to live this way. Number two is connect serving Christ with loving his body. I would say this has been one of the most helpful truths that I have understood over the course of my life. This is one of the most helpful truths. And I'm telling you, if you can make this connection in your brain, it will change your whole life. You'll be a different person for the rest of your life. Unhealthy churches don't have this connection in their brain. This is the connection. Connect serving Christ with loving his body, Matthew 25:40. And the king, this is the end of the Matthew 25 parable, but it says, the king will answer him, truly I tell you, whatever you did for one of the least of these brothers and sisters of mine, you did for me. You did it for me. See, your attitude, the way you treat the body of Christ is how you treat Christ. That's how you treat Christ. your attitude. So it's not even first and foremost about the person in front of you. Because see, this is what happens. We look at the people in front of us and we see problems. And we say, I like that, I don't like that. This person's smart, this person's blah, blah, blah. I like this, they're funny, they're cool, I feel better when I'm around them. And we look at the person and then we evaluate, do I want to engage with them based on the person? And when we think that way, we are thinking in the flesh. We are not thinking according to God's Spirit. Jesus says, whatever you do to the least of these brothers and sisters of mine, you're doing it to me. To me. And so our opportunity to love and worship Christ, so much of it comes down to how will you treat each other? And there have been so many times, and I have failed in this many times, but so many times throughout my life where I've just said, I'm in a situation, and maybe this person is unkind. This person is out of line. And that truth comes into my brain by God's grace. And I remember, oh no, this is about honoring Jesus. Whatever I do to them, I'm doing to him. So if he's worthy, if he's valuable, then I must love them. I must love Christ by loving them. By loving them. And we got to make that connection. John says, 1 John 4:20, for whoever does not love their brother and sister whom they have seen cannot love God whom they have not seen. So you say, oh, I love God, but you despise your brother. You don't love God. That's what John's saying. What we do to the least within the body, not out in the world, in the church, our attitude towards one another, this is all about the worship of Jesus. And there is a scary reality here. And there's also this huge opportunity because my heart, and I know like my heart, just like your heart, wants to worship Christ. Isn't there something inside of you that says, I just want to honor God. How do you do it? Love each other. Be devoted to one another. Listen well to each other. It's one of the ways we wash the feet of Christ. It's one of the ways we serve him, by serving each other. Hebrews 6:10 says, for God is not unjust. He will not forget your work and the love you demonstrated for his name. How did you work for him and demonstrate your love for him? By serving the saints. And by continuing to serve them. So day by day, God wants us to love him, to love each other. And in the process, God is honored. We're built up in the faith. And our message, the message of the gospel, becomes compelling to the world. Let's go ahead and pray. Father, we thank you.